Back up, please.
Hello and welcome to IndyCast episode number 248. I'm your host Aditya, and along with me, my good friend Abhishek.
Hello everyone. We're back after a short break to two of the biggest breaking news that India has seen in the last 24 hours and a week.
Absolutely. The big news is Paytm. We will be talking about the Paytm stuff. Paytm got RBI, to say the least, thoda sa khafa hai Paytm se. That's to put it extremely lightly. Then there is this electoral bonds was something that had happened. I just learned about it after the Supreme Court judgment came out in India. So that is a big one. At least it sounds like a big one. And the third one is an interesting one where scientists, a group of Israeli scientists, basically want to send a giant umbrella, or create a giant umbrella rather, to block a portion of solar radiation to slow down climate change.
Yes. It'll be fun to know what the brainstorming room looked like when whoever came up with that idea. But apparently it's an old one. We'll get there. But
it's
let's
an
start
old one.
With the Indian electoral bonds and what it means. And what's, if you type Indian electoral bonds, the Wikipedia entry was edited just 2 hours ago. So such is the pace at which the news is developing. Yeah, you're right. The Supreme Court has just struck down a scheme that would allow folks to donate to political parties by buying a bond, which the parties will then be able to encash within 15 days. And then some petitioners challenged it in the court, saying this is a distortion of democracy and that we don't know who is donating what to whom, which was actually the purpose of the whole thing, is what the BJP says, that we wanted to kill cash donations and black money proliferation. But instead, the other side says that, hey, the SBI, which is also a government that is a public sector undertaking, they know exactly that Abhishek Kumar donated 100 rupees, so you know who it is. And then if the government or the ruling party gets a whiff of all these folks, then it's against the laws of or against the rules set by the Election Commission. In short, in a nutshell, that's what it is.
It is complicated, right? So let's let's go back a little bit. There has been a rule for the longest time. For the longest time, when I say longest time, it's been since 1951. There is a section out there which says Representation of People's Act ke tahat, under Section 29C, which says ki parties are required to declare all contribution that they receive, which are over 20,000 rupees, whether it be from individuals or companies, they have to declare that. Right? That was the case until Finance Act 2017, which amended, which changed that rule, which said that you won't have to disclose to donation received through something known as electoral bonds. Now, what are electoral bonds? Basically, they are like bonds, which is bearer instruments. They are like currency notes, but they are only issued by a State Bank of India. And anyone who did not want to give cash, and this is again going back to what you were saying, is key to make it digitization. This was one of the ways that, at least it was pitched in that way. However, when they pitched, they also said that there are a couple of other modifications that were also made. The same rules that apply to cash don't apply to electoral bonds. That is, you don't
electoral,
need to...
not. You just made it an erection. Erectoral.
No
what
way.
Have you been watching right. These days?
Erection.
It reminds me of our first year of podcasting where I couldn't say sashes.
Sashes.
Yeah, go on. What about erectoral bonds? Tell me more about those first. I'd like to know more.
Nobody's
about
banning.
That,
no banning. No, there's no ban on that. No ban on that.
Yes.
Okay. No ban on that. No. The key point seems that companies can buy that, and then they can give it to anyone who they want. The political party can then, after 15 days, go and redeem it for actual money, and that money can be spent for anything that the political party who received it deems fit. It does not mean that it is not limited to only election-related activities, but it can be for anything. which causes a lot of, you know, lack of transparency, opaqueness in how the donations are being used, who is giving it. There were also changes that were made that previously foreign corporate bodies couldn't donate. However, there was also another change made where the foreign companies could register in India, and then the Indian entity can buy these bonds and give it to whoever they want. It is a way to make private donations.
Yes, and these can be, I think the minimum amount is 1,000 rupees
yeah,
to
1,000
a crore.
Rupees.
Now, that's crore is a big amount. So you can, you know, go to a State Bank of India and get these bonds, which are interest free. And who can get this? The recipients, not just any political party, but someone who's received at least 1% of the vote in the last election. And that's according to, yes, that 1951 Act that you talked about, Representation of the People's Act. Section 29A to be precise. So, you know, these bonds are not anonymous as much as the BJP would want the rest of the country to believe, because again, SBI has a record of both the donor, that is say you and me walking into a bank, and the recipient as well. If the ruling party or any party for that matter knows who these donors are, they can use this information, and then that goes against the grain of democracy. And another thing is, there are these transaction fees or service charges that you have to pay, right, for these. It could be a couple of rupees to SBI. Now, donors don't pay that, but taxpayers do. So then one contention is, then taxpayers need to know what exactly these transactions are. Then it's like a chicken and egg. It was a noble cause by the government saying we want to get rid of cash donations. But yeah, then the flip side is that, you know, you have these kinds of problems. And the Supreme Court said that, and I quote, citizens have a duty to hold the government accountable for their actions and inactions. And this can only happen if the government is open and not clothed in secrecy, which is a pretty damning statement. And for the Supreme Court to say, and I'm happy that it has grown another body part in its anatomy, which is the spine, from the last two judgments that it had. It didn't seem that it had.
I wasn't thinking about the spine when you said another part.
Oh, that's because you're still on electoral bonds. That's why. But
sorry about that.
It has a bit of a history. In 2021 itself, it had turned down the government's idea of starting to sell new bonds beyond these electoral bonds. That's where we stand. But despite the Supreme Court asking no further donations to happen through this route, already some 160 billion rupees or $1.9 billion have been sold. And a good, I think, 57% of this, which is $640 million, is what the BJP has already received. And 10% to the Congress party.
Yeah, and those numbers basically also line up pretty much very well with the electoral results, don't they?
Yes, they do. And this is important, by the way. I mean, Indian elections are the most expensive in the world, surpassing even that of the American ones. Obviously, we know it's a bigger country and expanse, a logistical nightmare to have elections in smaller villages. So $7.2 billion is what the Indian elections cost us in 2019. $7.2 billion, that's a big sum.
So what is going to happen? What was the Supreme Court announcement now?
So this bond is pretty much killed, but the money that these parties have already received can't be taken back. So they have it now. So that's done. Some of the opposition parties are saying that the damage is done. The elections are only 2 or 3 months away, but at least further damage can be stopped. More money will not go into their coffers through this route. They will have to work a little harder for it. This news has been covered by all the foreign publications as well, stating that this will be a blow to the BJP, but I am not so sure about it. And in terms of where they stand today, Modi is omnipotent right now in India, with nobody close to challenge him. So that's a foregone
There's
conclusion.
There's no one, right?
Although,
yeah, there is no
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
There is nothing else is expected, isn't it?
Correct. But, you know, elections are funny that way. We don't know what happens until that day with farmers' protests that are going on right now, etc. But yeah, but there's nobody.
Let me say that. Who, if not him, then who? Who would it be? That's the worry.
There is no contender, right? Because
there is no contender.
We don't know.
Yeah, people ask me, you know, out here, there are conversations that happen between friends. And that's the one, is that everyone, you know, man talks about these sort of things. I'm like, who else? At least won't we almost prefer to have him decisive, which takes us to what is happening in Pakistan right now, right? There is a completely fractured election result that happened. Imran Khan's party, who, by the way, there's an interesting story around how their symbol was removed. So their party's symbol is bat, an actual cricket bat, was not approved and was not on the ballot.
Yeah. And I think he was as an independent, right?
Yeah, so everyone came together as an independent as a result. They were the single largest party.
Hmm.
But now there are coalition governments being formed by six different government, for six different parties. And we all know what happens. India went through this during Manmohan Singh's time with a coalition government and nothing was done. Right? And that was the last decade for India.
And that's where the other end of the criticism for the Modi government is that despite the thumping majority, we could have done more, is the refrain every passing term that he has had from 2014. And coming, I mean, the Pakistan bit, you know, one of the ministers recently had asked their people to drink less tea because it was battling with the debt crisis, because when they have to import tea, that hits their import bill. And he said the average Pakistani drinks three cups of tea a day. And he said, hey, we should cut, and I quote, to cut down the consumption of tea by one or two cups, is what he said. And on Twitter, you had austerity tea, you know, on social media. Yeah, austerity. So,
chai pe banti hai logon ki. So, yeah, that is how, but I was, yeah, exactly. Right. So I was reading about a few comments made by this professor of economics in, or rather finance from, at Princeton from Pakistan, or rather Pakistani heritage, I should say. All the key indicators of growth are in red right now. And then on top of this, you have this sort of an election result, or rather a coalition government coming up. It's going to be extremely difficult. So which one do we prefer? What is good for India? The 10 years of Manmohan Singh as a prime minister, or 10 years of Modi, which is like he's coming up on 10 years, right, of Modi happening.
Yeah.
What, if I ask you a direct question, what do you prefer, Abhishek?
Action over inaction. So I think
dude, you have gone some PR training. You did not say this or that. You did not take the name. I need to learn from you.
No, don't be that way.
I'm very proud of what you said.
And say it as it is. No, so even if Modi, if you've got to win with a thumping majority and do a few things, those big bang reforms, land acquisition, this, that, and the other. And at the same time, but a good democracy should have somebody who can, I think I'm like a parrot when it comes to this, because we've talked about this previously, is if you don't have a good adversary, contender, whatever you call it, it's not good democracy then. I mean, it's not democracy.
Absolutely.
Then. You know,
but whose job is it to have a, whose job is to ensure that there is a contender or good, strong opposition?
Whose job is it? So either you become that person who, it was Kejriwal who tried to be that guy when in 2004 he was just a civil servant who introduced the RTI Act, and then he said, "Hey, main jayega andar," and then he went and whatever little he could do, he isn't a contender to. Or we hope that Congress, which is the second in line, throws a candidate who will inspire at least the generations, Gen Z jo bolta hai, or millennials, to say, okay, this is interesting, let's hear him at least. Currently there is nobody on the other side, it's just Mr. Modi all over the place.
Mr. Modi, BJP is there. Yeah, interestingly, it was the emergency time that gave rise to the BJP, the force behind BJP, the Atal Bihari Vajpayee and all those guys. That is when it actually started, right?
Yes.
So maybe there needs to be an event. Like you had to have RTI for a Kejriwal to come out. You need to have some sort of an event for someone to take up these positions.
These electoral bonds being banned they're just minor blips in the road for the BJP to, you know, get another one. And the judge, I think these judges love to write. You know, this ruling was 232 pages long. They have to do a lot of, you know, writing. These judges is what I realized. My grandfather, who is no longer with us right now, he was a judge. And these guys love to write. And they love the language. 230 pages, man. And some of them are 700 pages.
Because I think it is their job to make things clear also. Why did they take a
Yeah,
particular
yeah.
position, right? Precedence and stuff like that, right? They can't, it's not like an opinion. It's not like us, right?
Yeah, that's true. But do you know they also are very poetic? Judges are known to quote Shakespeare who was Freud. Although, no, they are. In fact, I'll tell you what, my grandfather, and this is, you take me back to my childhood, he would say, are you reading Shakespeare? I said, no, man, that's not in our curriculum. He would say, no, go and get a book from the library. And then his most favorite line was, if you prick us, do we not bleed? I said, if you tickle us, do we not laugh? If you poison us, do we not die? And if you wrong us, shall we not revenge? This he used to forget that he had already told me 100 times.
Oh,
and he would
wow.
say this, that go and read. And unfortunately, I did not. And in his judgments, he would quote Shakespeare, man, when he was in his youth.
That's really good. This was back in Kolhapur. Am I not wrong?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah, Kolhapur.
Sangli,
yeah,
Kolhapur. Imagine. And then later, Bandra. He came to Bandra or Bandra,
Bandra.
Whatever.
Bandra.
So they used
that's
to.
That's crazy.
But I don't know why they write such long sentences, man. They just do. In our law, we had law, dude. In FI,
we had law.
Do you remember?
We had law. Yeah.
And
we had
sentences
business
would
law.
Be never business law, but the sentences would never end, man. 5 sentences with semicolons and commas. That's why you have a legal department.
You are absolutely right. I mean, one of the things that I use in my for work is on the regulatory side, and law is what we learned back in our undergrad, and probably that is the only thing that is relevant. In what I do, I don't do cost accounting. I don't do any of that economics.
You don't, but I mean, there are folks
many
who do it, right?
Of
it's
course,
important.
There are,
I mean, in the organization, yeah.
Yes, of course, it is important. But where I was going was that out of all the things that I thought would be important at that time, I did not think that it would be business law topic that we learned. That would be something that I would use. That is where I was going. Not to say that all those things are not important. And on that topic, Paytm is one of, as the headlines call it, the darling of fintech industry in India, is going through a rough patch.
Yes, and I heard about that. Do you know from whom? Of the unlikeliest of sources. My motorbike, I had to fill in some air on the way. I stopped near a puncture wala. He did the thing. I said, Paytm loge, and he said, nahi nahi, Paytm to band ho gaya na. Well, what are you talking about? And that was around Jan 31st or 1st. And he said, no, I said, don't believe in rumors. Ye Paytm log karke. And then he was ahead of the curve, because on that day, the Reserve Bank of India had asked Paytm banks, Paytm banks to wind down its business. Tell us why, Aditya. And you've been there, and it's your...
I've been there. Yeah, full disclosure.
Yes.
I've been there. I've worked very closely in with the senior leadership at Paytm, Vijay, and all those folks extremely closely. I never worked directly on the Paytm bank side of products. It's a different company, but Paytm payments products, which I was heavily involved in, also used Paytm bank infrastructure, right? So what has happened is now RBI has come back and said that Paytm, that they have been flagging a lot of inconsistencies, a lot of compliance related issues when it comes to Paytm Payments Bank. As a result, Paytm Payment Bank needs to, they would like it to stop operations from Feb 29th.
Yes, and they've just extended that to March 15th now.
They
just
have extended that to March 15th. It's been extremely difficult to track this story, and there is a lot of things being said by so many people because the company touches so many lives, right? So everyone has a lot of opinions about it. So RBI said that Paytm bank account holders can no longer put money in their bank account. They could still keep debiting their account until the balance is exhausted. They can put money in up to March 15th, but not after that.
The folks who are depositing money, they are not going to lose it, because there is a concept of deposit insurance where you are guaranteed under the RBI provisions that you have insurance against that amount and you won't lose it. And even the payments banks are expected to, put some 75% of balances in government securities and 25% in commercial bank balances. Yeah, so nobody's losing any money except Paytm losing sleep and their folks, for sure.
So what Paytm is now working on is trying to find other banks who will take over these customers from them. Now, once a bank agrees to take over a customer, and as of 40 minutes ago, I think I just saw, I haven't read in detail, I saw an announcement that Axis Bank is ready, willing to take over the customers. So what is going to happen now is that they will redo all their systems so that all the funds, all the deposit, all the accounts will now sit with Axis Bank. Paytm will have to comply with all the regulations and requirements that Axis Bank has. The account will still be accessible through Paytm interface, but the money will actually sit with Axis Bank. All right. It's a sponsor bank model is what globally very popularly known as. And rest of it works without any issues. Your FASTag will work properly. Your, you know, all the other payments will work without any issues. It's just that Paytm, now the bank accounts which were earlier in Payments Bank will be with Axis Bank.
And the impact is pretty huge in that Paytm Bank has got some 300 million wallets is what I read. Some 30 million bank accounts and 8 million FASTags, which, by the way, FASTags, you may not have seen them as much in action here. They often don't work, nothing to do with Paytm, but the scanner doesn't identify. And then you have to wait at the toll naka. Then a guy comes with a huge selfie stick, which is connected to a scanner. And then, ruko, thamba, thamba. And then they get that done. and then you move forward. The allegations are quite scary. Persistent non-compliance and continued material supervisory concerns in the bank is what they say under the Section 35A of the Banking Regulation Act 1949. The Reserve Bank of India has then said that, hey, because of that, we can't allow you to
exist anymore.
That was largely down to allegations of suspicion of violating foreign exchange rules. Now, of course, Paytm denies all of this, saying that there is no way that we can have outward foreign remittances. But Reuters talks about a government source. Now, we don't know who that government source is, but allegedly talks about some high-value transactions in a number of accounts were done without verification. A few thousand accounts did not have KYC norms, and sometimes the same documents, KYC documents, were used across different accounts. So there's a lot of smoke. We don't know where the fire is or how much is it. Does the punishment fit the crime is what some of the entrepreneurs out there are, debating. Yeah. Is it too harsh? But you know what worries me is Paytm's response, Aditya. When it just came out, right, the first response was, it'll be just fine. It's a speed bump is what Vijay Shekhar Sharma talked about. Paytm spokesperson said unfounded and factually incorrect. And so they came with all guns blazing rather than just giving a measured response is what I thought. And this is typical of any company which appears to be in a lot of stress. Now, I may be wrong. This might just fly by. But I thought they were quite defensive and worried.
RBI is a respected body, right? If they have been pointing out all these sorts of issues, and I have not been with the company since 21, they have been pointing out all these issues. If they say that they are not being taken seriously, that's a problem, right? Someone from the company should have taken that up and addressed it properly, show progress being made. I think RBI is also an extremely progressive organization, is that they understand that things cannot be changed immediately. However, if things were worsening or action or it was status quo, that's an issue. I can understand why a regulator might take that, right? So assuming what they are stating is accurate, etc., a Paytm should have done better in taking it seriously. There could have been this sense. A lot of people tell me that they did not expect this. Paytm is just too big, too entrenched in everybody's life for something like this to just happen for government to do. And if everyone else is thinking that, it wouldn't be far-fetched to think that someone at the company would also think the same, right? That they will fine us. That's the max that will happen, right? They will just fine us.
And slap on the wrist.
Forward, give us another date and do that. That is what has been happening so far. They did pay a fine.
Yes, they did. You're right. And there was some raid. I think it was March 2022. When the RBI had ordered a proper audit of the Paytm Payments Bank system. And in October 2023, which is a few months ago, it fined the bank. You're right. Fined because did not do enough due diligence of customers. Yeah.
This is not unheard of, this sort of things. You mentioned about KYC issues and multiple Aadhaar card, PAN card. It is not unheard of issues in the banking industry in India. What people are surprised with is that this sort of an action was never taken against even big lenders, even with big banks. Nobody asked them to shut down their bank operations in 30 days. Probably because they were grown-ups, they were not people, they were people from the banking industry. There might be a little bit of a bias where, hey, this is the fintech coming in, and you know, a little bit of that could be there. And overall feeling is that this is a massive overreach to ask someone to completely shut down something. People are speculating so much. Even I'm speculating so much as I speak, right? So who got hurt at the end of the day, if we talk about it? It is $2 billion worth of equity was wiped off.
3.2. So
3.2, of course. I'm saying in the first 2 days. Uske baad to zyada hua. Who got hammered here? I think people got the hammered.
Shareholders.
Right? Yeah, the retailers got. There was no indication to shareholders, or at least not enough to highlight this as a problem. Analysts were surprised. Analysts, who it's their freaking job to track all these things. They were quoting Paytm to be at 1250 rupees. Who loses? It's retail investors, the company. Which investor is going to come and say that I'll put in money here? Or it becomes a little bit of a question mark, saying that, hey, for such a thing, this extreme action could be taken, and then you lose everything.
On one hand, on the other hand, you're talking like I think it was Franklin Roosevelt who said that, give me an economist with one hand, because he says you can increase your interest rates. On one hand, if you do this, this will happen. But on the other hand, if you do this, that will happen. So inflation and interest rates go hand in hand. So I don't know if the Paytm employees are sleeping at all. Paytm's Vijay Shekhar Sharma has tweeted that I'm with every Paytm member and I salute you for your relentless support. For every challenge, there is a solution, and we are sincerely committed to serve our nation in full compliance. That compliance word is something that is being thrown around everywhere now.
Yeah,
because the questions are being asked about if the basics were right.
Absolutely right. And I think it comes from a place where also there is a massive learning curve. The company started where there weren't any rules. And by the way, I must point out, it's a little bit of a stretch, but it's not completely inaccurate, I would say, is that if there was no Paytm, there would be no UPI. If there was no Paytm, there would be definitely not be Bharat Pay. There would definitely not be Phone Pay. There would definitely not be so many people with bank accounts in India.
Do you think it would have only delayed what happened? Meaning somebody would have come perhaps and... Because UPI, finally, the government also needed somebody beyond Bheem. And that company happened to be Paytm, right? You were there during the peak, so you might have a better...
Absolutely, right? And the problem was never the technology. The problem was, how do you make it part of someone's life? At that, we have to give it to Paytm, is that they taught India how to do scanning of UPI, of a QR code.
Yes, they were the first ones. Yeah, that's true.
Who got... Yeah. The bill payment thing to be a consumer thing.
Yes.
The fact that your mom or someone are, you know, they know about all these things is Paytm, boss. So we got to keep that in mind, right? I mean, what this company has done for India, I would say.
It's a private entity. Let's not be fooled. It is there for a profit. It did it for its own sake as well. So it's no charity that the company is where it is today. It found a need and it filled it.
That is why socialism doesn't work, right? Is if there is someone for something to gain from by doing it, they become an expert in it, right? They care about, otherwise there is no incentive. What I mean to say is, I don't also mean to glorify Paytm, by the way, but there is a little bit of a truth in what I said. So you may not agree with it completely. The genes following regulations, compliance are not culturally embedded like it is at SBI or what have you, or, you know, legacy banks. But not having that itself is led to what this massive revolution has been. Could they have done a lot more? Of course, right? All banks could do more when it comes to these sort of things. In the last 2 years, there have been adults from compliance background that have been brought into the company. Systems have been set up. Is there a culture there? Culture is building right now, right? How do you go from, it's not a switch, right? That you flip. From what I hear now, every before anything gets launched, it needs to get a approval from regulatory. Regulatory people are in all the product meetings, blah, 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 all those sort of things. But that was not the case because it was a startup, man.
And founder-led, one of those things, right? Where I think he is as popular as the brand, or probably a little more popular. People recognize him.
Vijay is PTM, right? I mean, I used to be in, there were cases when he used to be in Canada and we were walking down and he would get recognized in Canada. Which business person gets recognized? And yeah, there are only a few. So while this crisis is going on, if there is one person who can also bring it back from where it is, I think it is this guy. Let's see.
Fingers crossed.
Absolutely. And the last one, we have already gone on for such a long time. There is a massive umbrella that the Israeli scientists are going to be putting out, or rather not massive. When I went into the story, I really found out they are saying that they want to put out millions of umbrellas, which together will form this a shade which will help reduce the increase in temperatures of Earth and bring it to a more controllable level and stop exceeding it from going above 1.5 Celsius.
The shield, or the umbrella, so to speak, will stretch an area of around 1 million square miles, or about the size of Argentina.
And this idea, as you were saying, that this is not a new idea, right? It's just been a very far-fetched idea. All other solutions are focusing on how to reduce emissions on the planet, right? There is not enough thought being, or ideas being presented on what can be done outside of the Earth. So this is one of those things, is that there have been other examples also, which range from, you know, putting a thin sheet, putting a bubble up there. And this goes back to way 1989. There was a scientist who proposed a space-based solar shield. But there are sunshade idea critics as well. One of the very vocal critics of the sunshade idea is, her name is Suzanne Bauer, if I'm pronouncing her name right. I hope I am. What she said, that this is just going to be too expensive. It's going to cost trillions of dollars, at least $1 trillion, they said, is what it will cost to put this up. And then what happens if there is a solar storm, or there is space rocks, etc., collided into it, then what happens, right? To that, the Israeli scientists have responded, making, which sounds like a good point, is that on the cost point, they're like, yes, it's going to take $1 trillion. They were like, this is only a year's budget that the US spends on their defense. So US spent $662 million, billion dollars in a year, in last year. And this is going to be a global problem. So if everyone comes together and contributes to this, this can be solved, because it's solving the Earth issue. So it's $1 trillion is not a lot to save Earth and all the big impacts that it is having, is what they are saying.
The irony is, every country wants to have that defense budget so that it doesn't attack or get attacked. And
That's the whole thing. It's like this arms race doesn't end, right?
Absolutely. And this, because it's a global problem, it's like an email. When you write "Dear All" and have five people marked in two, the responsibility, nobody knows who does it belong to and who's accountable. So here, this is a similar one. Who takes that responsibility? It's like cleaning space junk. There's a lot of junk up there, and it's hard to know, who's responsible to clean whose junk, because it's lying up there in different orbits. So that's why, you know, countries sometimes come together and say, hey, let's Dutch karte hain thoda. You take a little bit. I'll, you know, let's contribute to this. And, you know, I'll give you some information when the time comes.
No, so I think we should collaborate. Just go back to who created. Yeah, if there's a way to go back to who created the problems. That was episode number 248 for you. If you liked what we were discussing, I know there was a lot of speculative comments that I made today, right? So take it with a pinch of salt. If you want to join us for the next episode, please go to your favorite podcast app and look up Indicast, and you'll see a big pink. We have made it specifically pink so that it's easily identifiable, and hit the follow button so that episode gets to you automatically. Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.